Vishnu glances through Namah Tattva, and his glance is innumerable jivas that are resting until the next prakash inside the body of Mahavishnu. Vyakto Vyaktat, Avyakto Avyaktat, the verses in Gita. And their jivas are lying there with all, and contained within their chitta is their parabdha, and I mean rather their aparabdha and kutambijam, all their proclivities and tendencies to act in a particular karmic way in the material world, because they're still here. So they're just sleeping. They're sleeping. Yoga Nidra within the body of Mahavishnu. Then he, at the time of creation, then he glances, and he's glancing and exhaling. He exhales. That one exhalation of Lord Vishnu is the entire time of material creation, one manifestation. When he looks, unlimited millions of jivas come out of his glance. So therefore, they're tatasta. They're spiritual because they're coming from Mahavishnu. But now they're on their way to journey to the pradhan, the personification or amalgamation of all the material, of matter, material energy. That Bahiranga Shakti personified as Pradhana Mahatattva, you know, it divides and expands. So that receptive unit, the receiver, the aggressive unit is the male and the receiver is the female. So the propulsion, the aggression, emission of the glance, ejection, whatever you want to call it, is a form of ejection, you know, like a man ejects his seed into the woman. So Vishnu is ejecting his seed through his eyes, like we hear, I don't know, that the peacock does the same thing. It's a very phenomenal bird. They say, Krishna, why do you wear a peacock feather on your head? To proclaim to the world that, like peacocks, see, I'm like a peacock. Yes, I'm proud. Yes, I'm colorful. Dear Alita, dear Prashant, dear Odita, dear Dhata. I'm a dear Alita Nayak. I'm very proud of my talents and my... I'm Kala Nidhi. I'm an ocean of limited arts. Kala Nidhi. And I'm beautiful like this peacock. And I can dance like this peacock. And I've strut around proudly through my brush like a peacock. But what it really means, and it means all those things also, is that I'm colorful, I'm proud, I'm talented, I'm unique. Peacock is unique. Many birds, even they look alike. Is that a this or a that? Is that a sparrow or no, that's a robin, or that's a this, or cheerio, that's a... But there is no bird that looks like, no bird in the water, in the air, anywhere that looks like a peacock, right? Or acts like one. And there's no human bird or God, no human bird or God that looks like or acts like or struts like Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai. That's not why he wears it. He wears it because he likes it. It's cool. And he's from the village. And village kids, as you know, they grow up in the village. They wander around the forest. In certain seasons, the peacocks molt. They drop their feathers. And they look so colorful. And kids are always attracted to something attractive, like anybody else. Hey, look at that. It's all brown leaves and green grass and a few twigs and sticks. And then all of a sudden, boing, there's this rainbow peacock feather with an eye on it. Like when we go on the Pariksha Marg, it catches the eye, isn't it? Walking around the dry, dusty pass of Govardhan, and then you see a peacock, and then you feel like you found a treasure. Oh, look at this. And you pick it up. He wears it to proclaim to the world that, like the peacock who dances with women, who associates with women, but he remains a brahmachari because he has no intimate contact with them, I am the same way. I dance with women, not only women of my same species, humans. Of course, they're Antaranga Shakti, Krishna's Antaranga Shakti, but they're wise of others. And at the same time, all the while, I maintain my pure brahmacharya. That's why the Gopalatapani Upanishad describes me and me alone and not Brahma and not Shiva, because they had some problems now and again, as the only brahmachari. As the only brahmachari. When demigods don't even count in the calculation, they're always going doing something funny. So therefore, this peacock feather means I am a pakka Krishna tu brahmachari. Gopal Tapani, the Shrutis are telling. This is the Shrutis, the praman for all of Indian culture. The foundation of Indian culture is the Shrutis. The original Shruti was one, Atharva Veda, then expanded in Rig Sama Yajur and Atharva. The four Shrutis, and then Smritis and all these agamas that come later as expansions and explanations and commentaries. So the Shrutis themselves, they're saying that the great mystery of Krishna bewildered Brahma. We have one head and we're bewildered. Brahma has millions of heads and he's also bewildered. And some universes, Brahma has millions of heads and he still can't understand the guy in his universe. Because there may be a huge universe, because a bigger universe is a bigger Brahma. We have four heads, some have 8, 16. So some universes, Brahma has a million heads. And in every universe, there's an earth planet. In every universe, Krishna's pastimes appear. So in some universes, right, there's this, what do you call it, Brahma Vimohan Leela. So here we think, okay, you know, I'm bewildered by Krishna's activities, Janma Karma, I can't understand, it's bewildering. And look at Brahma, he was also bewildered, but you know, he has four heads and he's still bewildered. But that's nothing. What about the universe where Brahma has millions of heads? He's also bewildered by the same Krishna, doing the same thing. So therefore it's very bewildering to understand. But this is, the Shrutis are saying, don't be bewildered. We know who he is. We know who Krishna is, and we know that he's a brahmacharya. You have to understand how this is all... Ananda chinmaya rasa pratibhavita abhis tabira yevani rupatiya kalavi goloka evani vasatya kilakma bhuto govindamadi purusham. We not only understand that these gopis are as nija shakti, there's, if you expand, you have one arm and you expand it. If I have one arm and then I expand another arm and I wrap myself around my two arms, that means I'm doing something wrong. If I go like this, hey, what are you doing with your right arm behind your back and your left arm in front of your, what are you doing? I'm embracing myself. Wow, I'm nice, you know. Isn't it? You know, I can get my arms around me and hug myself tightly. So that's all Krishna's doing. He's wrapping his arms around himself and hugging himself tightly. His very self is the expansion of the gopis. So there's no problem. So this peacock feather is like that. So, but now back to Shiva, this is the problem. Why is he worshipped as Linga? So that glance is the jivas, because there's no life without jiva. Just carrying a glance doesn't mean anything. Carrying somebody's eyeball, reflections of your eyeball and retina and all this karma and all this stuff. So Shiva's carrying the jivas because he has some seva connected with tamagun. So he carries a glance and then it's received by Rama, his wife, the genital, the female, the receptive organ of creation. So he, in one sense, he's the active principle, but he's not the source of life. The source of life is God, Vishnu. The jiva is life. You follow? And that's, it represents all that tattva. Basically, Shiva represents the enjoying, the tendency to want to enjoy, which, that's why he's carrying the jivas, because the jivas are carrying that potency. Every one of us has a tendency to enjoy. The ant has a tendency to enjoy sugar. It's his sanskar, it's his tendency. He eats all kinds of other bugs, and you see ants, they eat, if some lizard dies and falls on the floor, the ants come and eat his body. So they enjoy flesh. It's like, you know, dead lizards. It's a great feast. So you may have a great feast of dal and pakoras, but then when the sweet rice comes, it doesn't always come, but you can have a big feast without sweet rice. Then you're like, wow, like this is really good now. So they're eating dead lizards, and that's like a huge mahotsav. Chanti Mahotsav. So then when the sugar comes to the ant, because his basic tendency is to enjoy, not necessarily female ants, but to enjoy, and that may be the most pleasurable object to enjoy, that's undeniable, for everyone, even ants, I suppose. But when he gets that sugar, as opposed to dead lizards, and then he expresses his enjoying propensity to the max. So we enjoy so many things, but that's that other thing, man and woman, is the most, you know, desirable or whatever. So I would say that the tendency of the living entity, as is God, is that God is the supreme enjoyer. Bhuktaram yagatapasam. Matter of fact, that's a very, you know, for a few minutes in every day, he enjoys what was transcendental union. Divine union with his own spiritual counterpart, Srimati Radharani, his own energy, Ladini Shakti personified. He is the source of the energy, and let's say that form of Radharani, then it's so pleasurable and tasty, because it's imbued with dedication to him. It's hard to be dedicated to yourself. A lot of people are, or they try to be. But Radharani becomes imbued with some special flavor which Yogamaya arranges to entice Krishna and satisfy him. And it even says so many places in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Krishna, he gets more pleasure enjoying the different aspects of the rasa dance than he does from, you know, just the dancing and seeing the expertise and of the gopis than he does from the conjugal sports and intimacy. So it's, again, we should refine that presentation, that the desire for sex life is, that's, I would rather get back to the primordial urge of enjoyment. You follow? Because we're part of Krishna. He has, the basic bottom line is, we want to be happy, isn't it? Everyone will agree. Sex or no sex, you know, there's plenty of celibate women and men in the world, nuns and this and that, that are happy, really happy. They're just feeling, you know, atmaram, atmakam. Believe it or not, it's possible. And so that means that the real thing is happiness, which it's another way of saying happiness. The basic drive is the search for happiness, enjoyment. It's just a word, semantics. And whether it comes that way or not, okay. Like some yogi, you know, some hedonist may meet a yogi and say, oh, you know, you guys, you're a yogi, you know, you're a Bal yogi from birth. And, you know, you never had sex, so you don't know what you're missing, because that's the greatest pleasure in the material world. Even Shiva's after that. He says, are you kidding me, man? You know, this happiness and bliss you're talking about, this is called, you know, Martyananda. There's different divisions of bliss which are explained in Puranas, which I described in my Nectar Devotion days, which are so good. I don't mean BRS, Bhakti Rasa, I mean Nectar Devotion. Yes. They're too good. Why is Lord Shiva worshipped in linga form? Because what happened was that Brahma came to Pushkar, which is in Rajasthan. It's a very holy place, Lord Brahma. And he wanted to do a big yajna there and puja there. Because it's a famous Tirthan, Dharma Kshetra, religious place for doing these things for yuga after yuga. After yuga, Pushkar is called Tirtha Raj. Sometimes Prayag, and some yugas, Prayag, Allahabad is called Prayag Tirtha Raj. You must have heard this term. But that's maybe only in Kali Yuga or maybe Dwapara. But in other yugas, Pushkar is called Tirtha Raj. So very, very powerful place, and that people take a bath there and all this. So Brahma went there to do a yajna, and kings, and they have to do these yajnas with their wife sitting with them. Like Lord Ramachandra would do yajnas with Sita next to him and all this. So they were up there in Brahma Loka, and they had to get down, you know, get on their swan jet, Hamsa Airlines, and fly down on time. And so his wife was busy spraying her hair and putting on her earrings and stuff, taking time looking pretty as usual. So he couldn't wait. He said, I'm going. The Brahmins are waiting. So he went there and he said, where's your wife? You can't sit into the yajna and conduct this huge puja, ashwamedha or whatever it was, without your wife. And he said, well, she's busy. And he said, running out of time, you need to get a wife fast. They said, well, these are all earthly beings. I'm a celestial. I can't take one of these Rajasthani, you know, women over here. So he said, look, we have to turn one of these women into a devi, into a demigoddess. So the Brahmins are pretty clever. They have all kinds of interesting tricks up their sleeves and stuff. So they said, listen, we'll go to this nearby village. There's some cowherd people there, because Pushkar is like, you know, out in the kind of desert and country place. So they went to some village and they found some goshes or some gwals, gopas, coward people. And they said, do you have any virgin girls here? And they said, yeah, this one's over here. And they said, look, we just have to borrow her for a little while for this puja. And so they gave a bunch of donations and saris and stuff, and they took her. And then when they got there, they had one cow. And then they put her in the mouth of the cow. She was a little nervous, of course. They'd eaten by the cow, so they said don't worry, everything will be all right in the end, right? So they put her in the cow's mouth and took her out the end took her out the end of the cow. So when she came out of the end of the cow, then she had a celestial body. And because the cow represents all the demigods, All the Gomata, at least the Surabhi Indian cow, all the demigods live in different parts of the cow's body, and all of them. So now she, and then, so they said, so Brahma said, well, what's her name? He said, well, she's been delivered from the cow, so she's, call her a Gayatri. Gaya means cow, and tri or chayate means to deliver. So she's been delivered from the cow, born from the cow, created by the cow, so to speak. So she's Gayatri Devi. So she became Brahma's wife, one of his wives. So she sat for the yagyas. Swaha, swaha, swaha. So meanwhile, Mrs. Brahma came. I think her name is Savitri. Generally, it's mostly they say his wife's name is Savitri. In some places they say Saraswati. And sometimes they say Saraswati is daughter. But majority of the scriptures will have the consensus that his wife, primary wife, is Savitri. Savitri came to sit beside her husband. She got, who's this? Someone's taking my place? And the Brahmin said, hey, cool down. You know, she's just here for this yoga. She's like a proxy. And don't mind, you know, the original wife will be back soon. So the yoga is almost over. Just keep cool, and then he'll be with you in a few minutes, and you go. You can take care of him afterwards, but don't disturb the yoga. So she is making a disturbance. So then the yoga was over, and then Gayatri, I don't know, whatever, she just became part of the firmament of demigods or something, his wife or whatever. And then, but then, of course, his wife, Savitri, was angry because this is, cheated. You got another wife. You couldn't wait for me to go to the party, so you picked up another wife. I mean, that's pretty low class. I mean, can't you be a little patient? I mean, I was getting dressed up to look good for you and me too, but that's a little too much. So she got angry, and then she was giving her husband a sauce. She was yelling at him, and then she cursed him. She said, "You rascal." She said, "You come all the way here to the middle of the desert from the heavenly planets to do this puja because this is such an auspicious, religious, dharmic, punya place. And you don't even take me along, and I missed the whole auspicious event. So I curse you that the only place in the world that you'll be worshipped is Pushkar. No place else in this planet will you and Brahma be worshipped anywhere." And that's a fact. Curse holds true. Every other demigod, Varuna, is worshipped in different places, and every demigod is worshipped in different states. But not her. And then when that was happening to Brahma, then Shiva was kind of snickering. He was going, Brahma, because sometimes Parvati gets on his case, yells at Shiva, so that he was going, oh wow, he's getting the sauce. my brother demigod, his wife saucing him, rebuking him, so he went, kind of laughed a little bit at Brahma. And Savitri said, "You think it's funny, huh? You sit around all the time naked with your wife, Parvati, huh? Okay, you're in this world, you're only going to be worshipped as a linga and a yoni." And then she stormed off back to Brahmaloka. So that, why is Lord Shiva worshipped as a Shiva linga, which is a question I asked? And according to this Puranic story, which may or may not be, all the listeners on the internet who hear these tapes, don't get confused. I'm not saying he is, he could be. And we're waiting for further confirmation. So hold it right there. But stories like this certainly abound in the Puranas. There's abundance of stories of this one and that one getting cursed to be this and that and stones and every kind of thing. And, the Aishwarya of Vishnu and Krishna getting cursed and Shalagrams and all these things go on in different expansions and levels and dhams. So they do go on somehow. But I can't verify this, but it's interesting story about why Lord Shiva is worshipped as a linga. Because, I mean, everything is in character. Wives do get angry, and wives do curse people. That sounds right. We can relate to that. Women get angry, you this, that. And, men are impatient. So that's all in character. Men are impatient. Women are busy always getting dressed, and it's a very common thing. So the demigods there's not much difference, but they have subtle bodies, and the construction of their body is not stool and urine and all these kind of gross things. So there's not much scope for medical school up there in the heavenly planets, and you won't be able to get any jobs up there because there's no hospitals and no medical schools because they don't have all these, you know, breakable parts, you know, moving parts that break and stuff. Because their bodies are made of mind. They're made of mind. We have our mental body also, but unfortunately, strapped on top of that mental body is a big, messy, heavy, gross body, Linga Sharir, I believe so. Shukshma Sharir is the subtle body, the mental body. So they don't have this particular configuration of Linga, of our external, which means our external material body. But they have it's mind, but they have mind and mind, or outside mind, inside mind. Or inside mind and outside stool. Urine, pus, bones. They don't have bones, you know. There's no surgery. It's hard to understand. It's not that hard. You ever take rest at night? And did you ever dream? And then in the swapna, then you see what? Do you see air?
Everything.
You see bodies. What are they made of? What are those bodies made of you see in a dream?
Mind.
Mind. So they're mental bodies. The same with subtle beings, boots, prates, ghosts, they have mental bodies. Like with your mind, you can't go, with your body, you can't walk through this wall, but with your mind, you can walk through the wall because you can imagine what's on the other side. You can think your way through the wall. So the ghosts, they think their way through matter. Ghosts can pass through the wall. They don't have to go through the front door. Because mind is smaller than the air, is it? Do you agree that mind is smaller than air? Yes? So what's inside the wall? Cement. What's the cement made out of? Water and sand and all these things, and glue and all these things. So there's air in there. There's air everywhere. There's air in that wall. So the mind, they can just pass through because the mind is finer. What do we say in the Bhagavad Gita? Finer than the body is the senses. Finer than the senses is the mind. Finer than the mind is the intelligence. So these are pretty fine entities. Microscopic, invisible, powerful.